Why don't we pray for a minute? Lord, we pause now to commit this time to you. Thank you for the privilege of spending these moments together. Pray that you'd enlighten our minds as we talk about the trip and some of the things that are going on in the military ministry over in East Asia. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, as Bob said, I went on this trip to the Far East, particularly to take the Decade of Development Program to the military men involved in the Navigators Ministry throughout East Asia. Perhaps most of you have heard a lot more about the military work in Europe. As far as the Orient or Pacific areas or East Asia, whatever you want to call it, about the only thing that we've ever had there for the past several years is on and off somebody in Japan, down at Yokosuka, and then somebody in Okinawa. And so that's been the extent. But as of about 2 years ago, the Navigators appointed Mel Duke as a director for the entire work out in East Asia and asked him to develop it sufficiently with us in terms of staff members so that we're in more of the countries out there. And that's what we've done. And both the military work in East Asia and the military work in Europe tie in to the United States ministries, that is, for reporting purposes and so on. They are not, they don't report to anyone as far as the national ministry is concerned. It's tied into the U.S., and therefore, since Decade of Development is a United States fundraising program, we did want to talk about Decade of Development with the military people. Bob Byrd handled Europe, and I haven't gotten the latest statistics, but the last time I heard, they've raised somewhere around $40,000 and several thousand dollars also for staff members in Europe. So that's about all I can report on what's going on in Europe. Now, in Europe, since it's just the one country, mostly Germany, they did it more like we did it here in the U.S. That is, there were callers who were trained, came into some classes, which Bob Byrd conducted, and then they went out and they made personal calls out on the bases. Now, we couldn't do that in the Far East. There's just a little too much geography concern, all the way from Korea down to Thailand, to Okinawa, Guam, Philippines, just a little too much area for us to try to conduct the program this way. And we thought that it would be less expensive to buy a couple of plane tickets for Mel Duke and myself and for us to go where the men were. And so that's the way we did it. So after 6 weeks traveling for Decade of Development here in the States, in the Southeast, during February and early March, I came home for all of about 10 days or 2 weeks to kiss my little wife, and then I took off for another 2 months overseas. And that's quite an exciting thing, to pray and to get a tape that says, oh, I was in the hospital while you were gone, and all that sort of thing. As a lot of you know, my wife is pregnant, and she got the flu or something a couple times while I was gone, was in the hospital. So it was interesting from the standpoint of praying for her, and I appreciate those of you who were praying for Marilyn. Well, we started out in Japan, and this was, although I was in the Orient in the service in 1963, I was in the Far East for 6 months. Although I was in the Marine Corps, I was in aviation. And so my squadron, the Marine Corps squadron that I was in, went aboard a carrier in 1963, fighter squadron. And so for 6 months, we were aboard an aircraft carrier. And we went to Japan and Hong Kong and Philippines. But I had never been to Korea. I had never been to Singapore. I had never been to Thailand. I had never been to most of the places where I had gone. But it's a little different traveling as a civilian than it was traveling as a Marine back in 1963. And I found that things had changed quite a bit in 10 years in Japan. I remember vividly in Japan because I believe that it was during this six-month tour in the Orient in 1963 that the Lord got a hold of my heart as far as committing myself to the task personally of being involved in the fulfillment of the Great Commission. So it was a very nostalgic trip for me from that standpoint. As I went back to Japan and some of the places where I had been and some of the cities and some of the people that I had seen in those days as a 19 or 20 year old Marine, a brand new Christian, about a year old, as I began to allow the Lord to open my eyes to the needs of the world. And so it was enlightening for me to go back. But as those of you know who read or have friends or who have personally traveled overseas, When you take off going west in our world, you follow the sun, and you lose a lot of sleep. And so by the time you hit Japan, after 12 hours on an airplane following the sun all the way west, for you it's some unearthly hour of the morning, like 3 or 4 in the morning, but in Japan it's a bright, sunny 4 o'clock in the afternoon when you get there. And you have a lot of nervous energy, and you stay up, and you go to bed at the regular time, 10 or 11, and you get up the next morning and try to forget about that whole day that you had skipped. But your body seems to rebel against this after a couple of days, and you suddenly become exhausted. And so most of the gang, most of the men that I've talked to, Jim Downing and so on, that travel over there, say they have to take a few days to let their internal clocks get turned around and adjusted to that part of the world. And so that was the purpose of stopping in Japan. And I spent several days in Bob Boardman's home, fellowshipping with Bob. I had never spent this long a period of time with Bob this close, but it was a very enjoyable time with Bob and his family. And those of you who know Bob, or perhaps some of you give or pray for Bob Boardman in the Japan ministry, know that Bob is a very godly man. He's very deep in the Word, and he was just very challenging to be around for those several days, to watch him with his family and being involved there in Japan. Japan has changed. Japan is probably the most westernized nation in Asia at this time, from my perspective, and I'm not very educated at all of these worldwide statistics. I'm not a Waldron Scott or anything, but just from my brief time out there, it looks to me like it's obviously the most westernized nation in Asia, and has the highest income per capita as far as the people who live and work there. And things are quite expensive now in Japan. When I was there 10 years ago, you could still buy a lot of things quite inexpensively. Well, one of the things you don't do there anymore is go out and eat steak. It costs more to eat a steak dinner in Japan than it does in the United States. I was talking with someone who was at, Woody Woodburn down at First Presbyterian Church. Their business manager said that he and his wife stopped for a few days there, and they stayed in the Imperial Hotel, went down, had steak with he and his family, and got the bill. And the bill was about $18 U.S. each for each of them for a steak dinner in Japan. Cheapest one I saw was $9 U.S. for a steak, and that wasn't a very big one. So obviously you don't eat steak in Japan anymore. But many other things have really increased in price in Japan. And you just don't, you know, get very many good bargains there at all. And then, I don't know, for some reason, there seemed to be a lot more people there than I remembered from 10 years ago. And I was going to share this as one of the general observations of my time in Asia, is the masses of people. Now, as you and I sit here in our comfortable little homes in America, or we in Colorado Springs complain about a little traffic jam out on the freeway in Colorado Springs, all we have to do is talk to our friends in Chicago or Los Angeles or New York or Atlanta or something like that, we know that we don't have it half as bad as they do. But to us, a mass of people is going to the Citadel on Saturday afternoon. You know what I mean? And it's just that even though that nobody ever touches you, see, it's just the fact that there are so many people gathered together in one place. Americans have the greatest need for psyche space, psychologists tell us, than any other people on earth. We need more space to live. That's why our homes are 10 times as big as the average home in Asia. We just, you know, we've got to have you think of this castle. Can you imagine when General Palmer lived here? We were just discussing at lunch, Barry and I, you know, he had a room to go play his music in, and then he has the library up in the tower to go read a book. If he just wants to kind of sit around and do nothing, he can go down to his den, or then you have a study. You know, you have to go a different place to do everything. Well, you know, they just don't do things like that in Asia. And you've never had an experience until you've ridden on a train in Japan. I'm telling you. I mean, that's a frightening thing to have them say, well, I'll tell you what, when you see this stop, you get off, and then you do this and you do that. And here you are, and here's your little map, and you're on your own. And all of a sudden you go, gulp, really? And you get on those trains, you know, and it's like being on the freeway in Los Angeles. You try to get out, the door opens up, and there's 8 billion people trying to get out of the car all at once, and they're pushing you out, but you don't want to get out there. But you've got to get out of the way some way, because they're going to push you out. And, I mean, it's actual physical contact. I mean, you just walk in the train station, and there's just throngs of people all around you. We don't know what it is to be crowded. Just masses of people. From Japan, we started the actual decade of development and servicemen trip in Korea. So we went to Korea, to Seoul, Korea, and from Seoul I did go to Kunsan, I think it is. I've been back about 3.5 weeks. Yeah, Kunsan. Those are the only two bases. There are about 8 or 10 major military bases in Korea. Now, Korea was a very interesting country to be in. You feel like you're... I tried to analyze my feelings in that country, but try to realize that that country is armed. I mean, it's sitting right there with the communists just a few miles away over the border. That country is heavily armed. You've got missiles. You've got airplanes galore. It's like a cocked pistol just waiting to be fired. And it's kind of a... Thailand was the same way. We went way up to NKP, Nakhon Phanom, which is right on the Mekong River. You know, and you can look right across the river, and there they are, ready to do their thing. Well, Korea is like that, and you get that impression as you're in that country that it's just, you know, even though 20 years have elapsed since that war in that country, the scars and the marks and the feelings are all still there. It's just so obvious that it still has not recovered from that war. And of course, there's a great deal of suppression. I mean, you just don't talk about politics. You don't talk about anything. They're even beginning to imprison pastors who show any signs of sympathy toward anything that smacks of communism. And so the government is really severely cracking down on people, throwing people in jail. And so Larry Lee, our staff man there, working with the military, says when you talk to people, you just talk about Jesus. That's all. Forget about politics. Forget about communism. You don't talk about anything like that. You just talk about Christ, period. And that's the way to stay out of trouble, which is pretty good, you know. That seems to be kind of a New Testament principle, for we preach Christ and Him crucified and so on. So we stayed several days in Seoul, Korea. And there's a major army garrison there. Some of you men who may have been in the military may have heard of King Kaufman. Do you know him, Bob? King is the garrison commander in Seoul right now. Full bird colonel. Probably in the next 2 years will pin on a star. And very, very sympathetic toward the navigators. Loves the navigators. Very aggressive man. I mean, that was my first decade of development presentation on this trip, was to be ushered into this full bird colonel's office, who's got 15 minutes to give you. Sits down behind his big giant desk. All right, tell me what's going on here, man. You just got 15 minutes to dump the whole truck on him. Where do I sign? Okay, great. You know, and just bang, bang, bang. It was all over. Just kind of blink your eyes. But very aggressive man, very dynamic Christian, and exerts a major spiritual influence on not only his staff, but on the entire army garrison in Seoul. Has given Larry Lee, our staff man there, a great deal of liberty. Practically is a military man. He's just about to be approved for an APO post office box, commissary privileges, you know, the whole bit on the base, you know. But when you got a bird colonel pulling strings, things just seem to happen for some reason. And Larry Lee, as I said, is the staff man there. He's been there about a year, and hobnobs with light colonels and colonels around there. And I would say that the reason the military is so sympathetic toward what we're trying to do, the navigators, what we're trying to do over there, is because of the conditions of the country. I couldn't begin to explain in a mixed audience like this the problems that those men encounter in that country. But, I mean, I thought it was bad looking back 10 years ago at all the temptations that go on when you're in the Far East. But it just seems like it's been multiplied by 50. It's that bad. I mean, the prostitution problems and so on in town, and the dependency of the economy in these cities upon the American military for prostitution and so on. And so the commanders, I mean, are very understanding and simple. They want us there, man. They'll take, I had a chaplain say, man, I'll take five of them. I'll take all of them. I'll do whatever you want. Send me all the men you can. You know, they want our help. because the problems, the attrition rate, you know, and the drug problems that go along with the rest of this. And the men, they'll do anything to keep those guys out of trouble because they can't even get their job done. It's such a problem. And it's not just your enlisted men. It's penetrated right on up through the ranks of the leadership, the commanders. I'm sorry to say that there have been chaplains in Korea who have succumbed to this pressure, this lifestyle of living with the gals in town. So it's if you give or pray for any of these military ministries out there, that's the one major thing that you should pray, is for the stability of the staff and the stability of the men. We've had several guys who have come to know Christ and then who have fallen off the bandwagon under these kind of conditions, and it's just tough. It's just, in reality, it's probably not any tougher than it is right here in America. It's just that it's out in the open. Here in America, it's undercover. Everything is hush-hush. You have to go look up sin in America. There it comes looking for you in the Far East. But we had a delightful time in Seoul and in Kunsan. We took a couple of days and went to Kunsan, which is another base where we have a pretty strong NAV team, about 15 men really solidly hitting the barracks in evangelism, and guys are coming to know Christ. And boy, they're just hungry. I mean, we could have stopped the circuit and started it all over again and just keep going around and around and around and around, which would kill you. But the need for fellowship and preaching and teaching and, you know, the whole bit out there is so great that our guys, well, you take Larry, he's got, you know, 5 or 6 bases in that country. Well, it's pretty difficult for one man to give himself to making disciples, you know, when it takes him 2 days to get up here and back, and then he comes back to Seoul for a few days, and he's got to run off over to this base, and just round and around and around. It's a very itinerant sort of ministry, and then coupled with that is the fact that the men are only there for 13 months overseas. And so what Mel Duke is trying to do is to coordinate communications and so on with the military ministries here in this country so that he knows when they're coming over and when he's done with them, you know, what to do with them to plug them in back here so that there's more, and Europe, so that we kind of have a network of communications for the Navigators military ministry all over the world, here in the U.S., over in Europe. You know, so what we hope will happen in the next few years is that if a man gets plugged into a Navigator ministry, let's say in Florida, in the service, and he gets shipped over to anywhere in the Orient, Big Brother will be there waiting with open arms as he steps off the airplane. And then so on as he goes on to the next country. You know, this is what we hope will develop. We came back to Seoul and we had a Navigator one-day conference in the chapel under the auspices of the chaplain's program there. I'd say this is one of the most healthy things I observed, is that throughout East Asia, our work is very, very closely affiliated with the chapel program. Therefore, we have so much liberty. We can go anywhere. We can do anything we want on the bases. And it's a good deal because it's kind of a little bit of America. You know, you can get a hamburger on those bases. You can't get a hamburger. Well, they have something they call a hamburger, but I don't think it's very edible. But it's like a little bit of America, you know, in the middle of a foreign country. And so we came back and had this one-day conference in Seoul, and we had a lot of young people from the chapel program there as well as the military men. And I'd say the thing that characterized this trip was travel by day and talk all night. That's just about all we did. I mean, it was good for me after a couple of years here at headquarters to be that involved in the day-to-day ministry, because all I did was speak at conferences, conference after conference after conference, rally after rally after rally, and personal time with men in between. I mean, they're just so hungry that you can just preach your head off and have to look for time to sleep is about the way it goes. From Korea, we went to Okinawa, where John and Marnie Pickering are presently heading the ministry on the island of Okinawa. Some of you know John and Marnie. John was involved with Dan Green in California, and Marnie is from this part of the world right around here. And they're having a delightful ministry on basically two bases on Okinawa, Fatima and Kadena. One is an Air Force base and one is a Marine... Well, see, one is an Air Force base and the other is a... What is it, guys? I don't know. Yeah, helicopter base. That's what it is, Marine Corps. Gee, I ought to know my own bases. And in Okinawa, we had a very interesting time. We, since the Navigators have been in Okinawa for so many years, we've made a concerted effort at public relations in Okinawa. And so what Mel had set up was a decade of development banquet at the Okinawa Hilton, the biggest hotel, the fanciest banquet room, you know, with personal invitations to all of the big brass. We had, attending this banquet, the two-star general of the Air Force, the 13th Air Force, six bird colonels, you know, buku-like colonels, and, I mean, there was more brass there than you could shake a stick at. And plus all of the chaplains and all of the Christian community, the leadership of the Christian radio station, other missionaries. There were about 125 people at this banquet at the Okinawa Hilton. And we showed this new nav slide presentation using two projectors. It was kind of a spiffy deal, except for the speaker. I was the speaker. And, you know, here I was sitting at the head table and right here because, you know, according to protocol, you know, the general has the most prominent. And so here's the general sitting right here, staring, you know, at me as I talked, you know, skeptically. Yeah, what is this religious deal here? But, you know, he knows that we're doing a good thing. He's for us. He's not a believer, but he's for us because, you know, we help him keep his men out of trouble. And so it was a good time. The most interesting thing on that banquet was as we were eating our salad now, just as we were eating our salad, a little guy comes trotting out of the kitchen with a little piece of paper, says, at 8 o'clock, it was 15 minutes to 8, 8 o'clock, the kitchen is going on strike. What are we going to do? So your heart skips a couple of beats, and you say, well, you know, the Navigators to the rescue, plan B and all that sort of thing. So we had about 15 of the nav guys stand up en masse. They march out. They get a 15-minute course on how to serve a formal banquet. The kitchen goes on strike. The Navigators come in. The guys come in. Here are these, you know, big Marines and guys carrying these trays around. I mean, it was a formal, the kind of thing where you use a fork and a spoon to serve off onto the plates, this kind of deal. We only had one casualty. But I'm telling you, there were a lot of nervous guys serving that night. By the time they came around to me, I took my napkin like this and I threw it up over here as I held it. I saw some other people were taking their plates and turning around. They didn't want them leaning in there, pouring. And it was a fun time. And we were only off schedule 15 minutes. So it was a good deal. And the guy who was the MC really took advantage of this. And he plugged, you know, what we preach in the Navigators is not ourselves, but Jesus as Lord and ourselves your servants for Jesus' sake. And here were these guys serving. And boy, the general was really impressed, you know, that we turned a potentially disastrous situation, you know, into a profitable time. Probably it was a better deal. And so we used that as leverage. And Mel Duke talked me into going and talking to the manager the next day. And so I give him a little wine and dance song, and we put a little pressure on him, and we got the banquet reduced so that the whole banquet cost us $100. Because all you have to do is ask. Worst thing he could have said was no. Had him over a barrel. What could he say? You know, I mean, it would have looked very bad for the general and all these important people to be there and for them, for that banquet and refund money. You know, that could have been very embarrassing for the biggest hotel on the island. So the Lord was very gracious. We didn't raise a whole lot of money at that banquet, but it was a good public relations function, and it was followed up by personal calls, which they're continuing to do. I don't know if the general ever decided to get involved in decade of development or not. From Okinawa, we took a little R&R in Hong Kong. After all this time on the road and all these different bases and so on, we felt we needed a couple of days rest, so we stopped in Hong Kong, which is a favorite spot of mine. and spent a couple of days shopping and looking around, and had some time with a missionary family. Some of you know Bruce and Donna Carlson, who are on our staff. And Bruce's father is a missionary in Hong Kong. Mr. Carlson and Donald Carlson is his name, and we spent a delightful evening, Mel Duke and I, with Reverend Carlson and his wife, and just had a tremendous time. He, along with a number of other missionaries, are really trying to put pressure on the navigators to send somebody to Hong Kong. And it's possible that we may. I don't know what the thinking of the of Joe Simmons, our Pacific director, is, but it has such a financial base compared to the rest of Asia that it's possible that we might want to move in there, because it has the potential of an awfully good sending country, like Singapore. Singapore and Hong Kong are the two most stable economies, along with Japan's, in Asia. From Hong Kong, it was on to hot, sticky Thailand. And I didn't know how hot it could get until I got to Thailand. I threw all my coats in a box and sent them home. From then on, didn't never wore a coat, because from there south, it just gets worse, not better. Now, Thailand was a very interesting country. I'd never been in Thailand before. We started in Bangkok and flew up to Ubon. The NAV staff man, they're working with the military guys, is W.M. Day. And W.M. Day is at Ubon, U-B-O-N. Or the Thai say Ubal, U-B-O-L. It's language technicality, which was at one time the major base in Thailand. It's probably one of the larger ones, but it happens to be closing down now, and they're moving those men into other countries. Thailand is an interesting country from the standpoint of their history, their people, their culture. Their economy is out to lunch. It's the old... this is another thing I was going to share. I guess this would be a good place as any to inject this. That is, as you travel in Asia, there's an obvious lack of middle class in these countries, except for Japan. Japan has an emerging middle class, people who live somewhere in the middle, not rich and not poor. That's not so anywhere else. In Thailand and other countries in Asia, there just isn't any, or if it is, it's a infinitesimally small middle class. And so it's just the very rich, the very small number of very rich, and the very poor. And that's all there is. And so you get to a place like Thailand, where the per capita income average in a country like that is like $50 US. And for you to carry around, well, Thai money is interesting. You know, it's large denominations. And so you take, you know, $25 U.S. and exchange it for money in Thailand, and you look like you're, you know, a millionaire. A wad of bills like this that you stick in your pocket, and they are just very impressed by, naturally so, of anybody carrying that much money. That's a lot of money to them. $25, you know, would feed a family there for weeks in that country. This has its disadvantages as far as the military work is concerned, because for a military work, you need a halfway decent-sized home, and so on. And so W.M. Day lives in a house which is modest by American standards, but by Thai standards, he lives in a house like the guy who is the, I forget what they call it, it would be comparable to our county, but like the county governor lives in. You know, he would be considered one of the very wealthy people in the town of Ubon. And he is, by their standards. Everything has to be surrounded. In Korea, this is true. In Thailand, it's true. These are things that we just take for granted here in America. But in countries like Thailand and Korea and other countries, all of your homes are surrounded by high fences with iron gates, very protective measures. Burglars are rampant. People are hungry. You know they're going to go anywhere where they think they can find anything that's of value to eat. And so W.M. Day has several men living with him, but he also has a Thai couple who act as their servants. They have their own quarters. They cook, take care of the house, they wash, they guard. He sits up every night with a club guarding the compound every night. While everybody else is sleeping, he's awake. He sleeps in the daytime while everybody else is awake. And for all of those services, this couple, they charge them $50 a month, U.S., for all of that. Do all of their cooking and everything, which is to us would be, you know, nothing. To them, that couple consider themselves to be very, very fortunate to live in that kind of a home, eat that kind of food, in those conditions, and to, you know, to get paid $50 a month in addition to all of that. They consider themselves to be... So that does have its disadvantages, but one of the things you have to realize is in the military work is that, you know, we're not trying to reach the nationals in the military work. We're there to work with American servicemen. And so you need a, you know, a decent place to bring men for rallies and Bible studies. And the ministries there in East Asia are conducted much the same as they are here in the U.S. That is, you know, chapel... In the chapel program and worship services and Bible studies and classes and rallies. And the advantage of guys being over there involved in a ministry like this is that you are right in a country where all you have to do is take your little team of guys and say, we're going to have a little missionary weekend. And so you go off to some village in Thailand and you get some first-hand missionary exposure and experience. And consequently, I feel that the Lord is going to call a number of the men involved in that ministry over there, not only to himself, but early in their Christian growth, they are going to be challenged to give themselves to the task of taking the gospel to the world. I feel that's what happened with me when I was in the service years ago, was going overseas and seeing the need. It's just not the same as reading in newspapers or books or having somebody tell you. When you walk there and you see the people and you see the needs, it's different. And the Lord, the Spirit of God, just uses that to grip your heart and challenge you with the need in the world to hear the gospel. We hit two or three different bases in Thailand. Each time it was the same, a conference, a rally, ministering to the men and then presenting the Decade of Development program. I suppose the highlight of Thailand was in Bangkok going to see the Emerald Buddha. And I remember some of you may have heard Leroy tell about the last time he was in this temple of the Emerald Buddha and how depressed he felt. And you know Leroy, you know, he felt so depressed with the demon activity or the lack of the truth being revealed. It is a suppressing, depressing feeling to be in a place like this and to watch these people go through all this garbage that they go through ignorantly. And Leroy was so depressed that he started walking around singing, "What can wash away my sin? Nothing but the blood of Jesus." Singing this, see, as he was walking around. So I remembered that as I went into this temple. But it's a fascinating place. Being a history major in college, I turn on to this kind of thing, being in a place and finding out the development and of all of these types of things. But it's a very depressing feeling to be in there and watch people bow and light candles and flowers and all this rigmarole, crawl around on their knees, and you know, you don't dare ever allow the bottoms of your feet to point toward the Buddha, because you know that puts the Buddha below you, and you know there, you know, all sorts of things that go along that they'll do to you if you do all of these things. And so all you can do as a tourist, you even have to take your shoes off. And Leroy didn't even want to take his shoes off, but he had to. But you just walk in. All you can do is stand back in the corner here, sort of in the shadows, and watch what's going on. But, of course, Buddhism is the national religion in Thailand. And the navigators are thinking very seriously about entering Thailand this year. And so that's one of the things you could pray for Thailand, is that... the Lord would enlighten those in leadership over there as to the timing and the proper person to send into this country, which is, I think, very ripe. Although Buddhism is the national religion, the students in Bangkok and other large cities are very ripe and very talkative, very open to discussion. And I feel that, personally, that Thailand could become another Brazil. That kind of a thing could get started in Thailand. It would take the same kind of time, because there you're starting below ground zero. I mean, you know, the concept of who God is and and the Bible and all of this, you know, that's not even there. You have to start less than zero when you preach the gospel to someone like that. Let's see, that's Thailand. Then I went to Kuala Lumpur to spend some time with Paul Hensley, and then to Singapore to spend a couple of days with Dave Dawson, in whose home I lived several years ago, so we're good buddies, and that was kind of an R&R. And then we went on to the Philippines. Now, the Philippines is another interesting country, and this is a country that I hit when I was in the service years ago. On this ship, we came into Subic Bay in the Philippines on numerous occasions. And then there's a large Air Force base, probably the most important Air Force base in all of the Pacific, Clark Air Force Base in Angeli City. Clark is the headquarters of the 13th Air Force in the Pacific. So all of these other Air Force bases in Thailand, Korea, Japan, anywhere in the Pacific, they're all controlled from Clark. And so this is a very important base, and we don't have a navigator staff member there yet. And this is what we're praying for, is that the right person would come along and be available for an assignment to Clark. And it would be a very interesting assignment because it's one of the largest Air Force bases in the world. Would you like to go, Bob? It's a nice base, and we have good chaplain relations there. There are 2-3 major chapels on the base. And we had a very strong team leader there. He was there for 3 years and he just left. So the team is small there now. Most of the key guys have just gotten moved out. And so there's a new group. And the assignment is longer in the Philippines. The assignment's 2 years because it's not really considered a boondock assignment. And so the people are assigned there for 2 years and they're allowed to bring their families to Clark. But what we did was all of the people came up from Subic, all of the military men involved in the navigators from Subic Bay to Clark, and we had a large, large conference. Oh, by their standards, not by our standards here, a large conference is several hundred, but you know, you get 100 people to a conference out there in Asia. That's a lot of people to get together to any kind of a conference. So we had a large conference in the Philippines. Hello. And it was a very interesting conference, and it was a full weekend conference, so we had a good time there. Then we went on to Guam, where we have Glenn Jensen working on 2 bases on the island of Guam. Now that would be a tough assignment. Guam is like Hawaii, you know, it's a tropical island with beaches and palm trees and all that sort of thing. It's an interesting place. Incidentally, everywhere where you go in Asia today, the Japanese are there. And this is just one of the things that we should all be aware of, that the Japanese are very affluent. And they have done a remarkable thing in rebuilding their country from just a few short years ago. And you know that you've seen in Little Abner comic strips, you know, all the jokes about them buying up Dogpatch. Well, that's all true. That's why it's in the newspapers. They're buying up everything they can get their hands on in the world. And it's no longer the ugly Americans in Asia. It's the ugly Americans and the ugly Japanese, because they are everywhere. I used to live in Hawaii. Well, you walk down Waikiki Beach now, 30 to 40% of the people walking up and down Waikiki Beach now will be Japanese. They're rich enough now, they take their honeymoons all the way to Hawaii. If you're poor, you take your honeymoon, if you're Japanese, you take your honeymoon in Okinawa, if you don't have very much money. I mean, that's just a southern island of Japan. And Okinawa is now back under the control of the Japanese government. So it is Japan again. It used to be independent, but it's now Japan again. So they go to this little southern island of Okinawa. If you have a little bit more money, you fly to Guam for your honeymoon. So they're all over Guam. And then if you're rolling in the yen, then you go to Hawaii. And they always go in groups. You never see just a Japanese couple, or maybe even two. They're always in groups. They're very loyal and very nationalistic as they travel. And so it's usually 15 or 20 of them, you know, going somewhere together. And they're just all over the place in Asia. And then from Guam, where we had two conferences, one on each base. But this time I was very anxious to get to Hawaii because my wife was going to meet me there. And I got to Hawaii. I left Guam on Saturday, and Saturday night at midnight, and I got to Hawaii Saturday morning. And I don't know how that happened, but I got two Saturdays when I was over there. And we had a large conference in Hawaii. And, of course, this is where I met the Navigators. Some of you may know it was in Hawaii when I was in the Marine Corps in Hawaii. So Hawaii is my home. I lived there for several years after I got out of the service, working with the Navigators. So the Hawaii ministry is very dear to my heart, and it was very interesting to see how the Lord had developed. Here's my old friend up here. It's another product of the Hawaii ministry. And we were out there together. It's been a long time ago, hasn't it? And Cecil Davidson now is a staff member out there and just doing a remarkable job. You know, with Cecil, you can say, we want to have a key men's meeting, there will be 100 men. You want to have a team leaders meeting, there will be 100 men. If you want to have a general conference, there will be 100 men. You know, you get 100 people out to anything you want to have in Hawaii. And we're working on every base in Hawaii now on the island. There's Cecil doesn't even have a need to go to the bases. You know, he doesn't know who the chaplains are or anything. You know, they just all come to him. They flock in. He's got a large home. He has 12 men living in his home. How'd you like to cook for that, gals? And 12 men living in his basement, and literally in his basement, and working on these bases and on the University of Hawaii. And they're just having a bang-up time. I mean, they just do evangelism. They don't know what to do with all the people that come to know the Lord out there. But, you know, the one drawback to the ministry out there is it's like trying to make disciples in a sandbox. I mean, you know, it's the playground of the Pacific. Sun, surf, sin, you know, the whole bit is there in Hawaii. And so we had an interesting time there. And then I finally got to come home. That all was 7.5 weeks on this trip. We raised about $110,000, which was just a little short of our goal, but which is remarkable from the standpoint of that's only representative of 500 to 600 people involved in that amount of money. So it was profitable and from that standpoint. So the objective of the trip was met. Now, quickly, before we close, I want to repeat these impressions that I have of Asia, first of all. One was the masses of people. Now, you know, statistics are cold and lifeless. You can read in a book that says, you know, there are umpty-ump and per capita income is. You know, that just doesn't grab you till you're on a train trying to go somewhere in Japan, see. But then all of a sudden, the fact of the multitudes of people is real. And that really helps a verse like John 4:34 and 35 come alive, to lift your eyes up and look on the fields. They're white to harvest. And this is so true. And you can't help going to Asia, but just having your heart just weep over the need in all of Asia, the myriads of people. And then the thing on the lack of the middle class, the poor and the rich, one of the things that does to you is it makes you very thankful. And it makes you it makes you ask the Lord for forgiveness for complaining and griping when you do. Because if you had to live in their conditions and then come back to live in the conditions that all of us live in, we live like kings. Literally like kings. We live like the very elite of any of the people in any Asian country. Our standards of living are that high. We push buttons, you know, if we don't have a garage door opener, you know, we're bad off. And if we don't have it, you know, boy, that just gets to be a syndrome. It really begins to get a hold of you. And it takes something like this to kind of open your eyes and make you realize just how gracious the Lord has been in giving us what we have. And I think we should thank Him for that. And I suppose the verse that we could share on that would be 1 Timothy 6,